Hey everyone, Kyle here. Welcome back to the Climbing Majority podcast, where Max and I sit down with living legends, professional athletes, certified guides, and recreational climbers alike to discuss the topics, lessons, stories, and experiences found in the life of a climber. If you haven't already, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, everybody? Thanks for being here, and thank you for being a part of the Climbing Majority. Today, we sit down with Martin Mora, co-founder and developer of Redpoint. Redpoint is a new app where you can use interactive 3D maps to explore and get detailed route information on boulders and crags. If you haven't already seen their social posts of their app in action, you definitely need to check them out. Martin is a unique individual who, like many of us in the majority, found climbing later in his life. As he explored the world of climbing, he quickly realized that the current process of using guidebooks and Mountain Project to find and locate specific routes in new areas was inefficient and ineffective. He thought, there must be a better way. Because of this, he and his business partner have spent the last few years developing a process to scan and render three-dimensional images of crags and boulders that can be virtually explored on your phone. And now they are traveling the globe to ultimately begin the overwhelming task of scanning the world's most prominent and popular rock walls. Martin believes that the heavily detailed and comprehensive nature of these 3D scans will soon make traditional apps like Mountain Project feel archaic. You will no longer need to stitch together subjective beta in the comment sections. Martin even believes that Redpoint is on track to become the next Strava of climbing. But Martin isn't doing this alone. He's created a way for the entire community to get involved. Through what he calls the Dirtbag program, climbers like you can contribute scans and even get paid up to $20 per area or boulder that you map. All you need is your phone. So whether you're a tech enthusiast, an avid climber, or just love a good story about passion-fueled innovation, you will not want to miss what Martin has to say. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Climbing Majority podcast. Today is a special day because we are sitting down collectively in three different countries at the same time, which is pretty cool. Today we're sitting down with Max, of course, from Canada, and our guest today, Martin. Martin, what's your last name?
Mora.
Martin Mora. Yeah, he is sitting in Australia, Brisbane, correct?
Yep, exactly. I'm based now in Brisbane, but I'm originally Argentinian myself, so I moved here a few years ago.
Awesome. And we are talking today about Redpoint. This is an app that you developed, correct?
Yep, exactly.
We'll just kind of jump into it here. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you found climbing and how this app came to be.
Yeah, well, actually, like I was saying, I grew up in Argentina. I lived in Argentina till I was 25 years old. I never climbed while I was living in Argentina, honestly, even though it's actually a lot better place to climb than Australia. But when I moved to Australia, that was when I met a few people and made a few new friends that were climbers, and they were just bullying me into going climbing with them. And I was always actually pretty afraid of heights. I was, you know, had a lot of fear in that regard. And at the beginning, I was like, these people are all crazy. They want to kill themselves. Why take that crazy risk? That's for crazy people. Why would you do that? And I had seen Alex Honnold's movie, you know, Free Solo. And I was like, these people are absolutely mad. Why would anyone would subject themselves to that?
Good entry, standard entry movie to get anybody into climbing is go watch Free Solo.
Yeah, exactly. So one day, I think someone gave me for my birthday, like present, just we would all go together to the climbing gym. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go have a little fun. That's going to be definitely safer. And at least if something, I can, you know, fight against my fear of heights for a little bit, for a few hours at the gym. And I got there, I was like over gripping every hold, you know, just my forearms were burning like crazy. And I was like, okay, I can do this. And I, at the beginning, I started taking it more like exposure therapy. I was like, I can actually do this and maybe lose the fear of heights a little bit. But after a few months, I was addicted to it. I was going to the gym 3-4 times a week. A few friends started taking me out climbing as well. I started learning how to lead. And probably about a year after that was when the pandemic started. And all the gyms here in Australia had to close. They were forced to close. And we only could go climb outside, right? And what happened is that I was
frothing to go climb so much. And we bought all the equipment that we missed to be able to do everything we wanted to do, and started going out sometimes in the middle of the week. Because we're really lucky here in Brisbane, there's a cool crag just on the river that's called Kangaroo Point. And it's in the middle of the city. I'm literally 10-minute drive away from it, and I live pretty close to the center of the city. So that place was full of people every day at any hour during the pandemic, because everyone was wanting to go. That was like, it's like the outdoor gym that we have here. It's in the middle of the city.
Wow. Super cool, man. That's really, really interesting. I've always wondered about like climbing in Australia. And I think like you kind of brought up this fear of like free solo and killing yourself climbing. I actually have like mortal fear about all the spiders and snakes and reptiles. And I think you guys just have like every known thing that can kill people. Do you have any like weird encounters with spiders or anything climbing?
The funny thing is that you get so used to them. People here don't really notice them, the people that live here. And now I don't notice them anymore. But at the beginning, I was like, oh, there's a spider, there's a spider here. Because they're everywhere, honestly. Most of them are not poisonous. They're not poisonous. There's only a few species that are.
Okay.
But they are the most poisonous in the world. Just, yeah. You know, just in case.
When you come across them. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, honestly, the probably the worst thing is just finding them in your shoes when you let your shoes outside of the house after going in, having a few drinks with friends, come out, put your shoe on and have something moving inside. And it's like, whoa, such a weird feeling. That's why everyone here, if you go do that, leave your shoes outside of the house before getting in, everyone just bumps their shoes against something and then put them on, because that's a normal thing. But those are usually huntsman spiders, which aren't poisonous at all. They're just not dangerous.
Big brown guys.
They're just huge.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, those are not the size that you can find inside your shoes, though. That's a lucky thing. I've never seen one that big, but I found a few spiders under my bed in an old house that I was living before. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's interesting about like habituating yourself to something, because like I know people from New Zealand who will come over here and they want to see squirrels or like raccoons, you know, because like they don't have them apparently. Or like people are like so freaked out about like large bears here, you know. And for me, it's like just grown up around bears my whole life. I'm like, oh, they'll leave you alone for the most part, you know. Don't take that advice.
I've never seen a bear in my life, honestly.
Exactly.
Besides a zoo or something like that, you know?
So that like terrifies people, but for me, I'm like the inverse. I'm like, give me a snake or like a spider in my shoe and I'm just like done, you know, like running out of the room.
Now here's sometimes, even if you go hiking, you can see, I remember finding once a huge python crossing a river, and it's just like probably 3-4 meters long. They're thick, but those are also not, you know, not dangerous. They're not going to do anything to you.
I've heard that you guys have a kangaroo epidemic out there. Is that true?
I mean, there's more kangaroos in Australia than people. There's 45 million kangaroos, 25 million people.
Wow.
So that's
are
a
they
true fact.
Are they as invasive as the media makes them sound to be out here?
Not really that bad. But you know, there's licenses to hunt them. You can hunt them, you can buy kangaroo meat on the supermarket here. It's very common. And all that meat is not, they're not kangaroos that you have in a farm, you know. It's their hunt, all hunted kangaroos, because they're trying to control the population.
What about those big males that like look bigger than, you know, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger? Like, is that like real?
Real. Yeah, that's not a joke. Wow. It's not an exaggeration. They're that big. Yeah, the big red kangaroos are that big. They're that buffed and they're like scary, honestly.
I've seen enough like online Instagram videos of just like jack kangaroos like on their tails, and like they're like pecs are like rippling, like bodybuilders. Yeah. Like you can see like the upper and lower pec separation, and just like getting ready to like throw down with somebody. And you're like, holy shit, that kangaroo is jacked.
Here in Brisbane, there's a koala sanctuary where they basically rehabilitate some koalas and also kangaroos, and then bring them back to nature after, you know, they've been injured or something. And they have one, well, this last time I went, which was a few years ago, they had a huge, big red kangaroo there. And you just, it's fine because it's used to people, so it doesn't do anything. But you can see the size, you know. I'm 6'1", and it was almost as tall as I am. And probably wider than me a little bit. And, you know, the tail, and they just stand on the tail and kick you if they did.
Yeah.
Never seen one getting aggressive, though. Never, honestly. And I've seen kangaroos a lot of times.
Sweet.
I think this is a great like segue into just like climbing in Australia in general. You know, myself being from North America, Max being from Canada, I think a lot of our audience is based around those areas. And I would assume that most of us don't have a lot of a grasp of what the culture of climbing is like in Australia. Maybe kind of like bring us up to speed.
Well, the culture of climbing in Australia is quite well developed. Honestly, it's a funky, really cool culture over here. If you see in the app itself, and you start scrolling through some of the walls that we have uploaded there, there's a bit of a culture of naming routes funny stuff or very inappropriate stuff in some cases. So if you go by sometimes on Instagram and our reels, people commented, "Oh, that's the name of the route. How the hell is this? Is crazy." And it's been very funny to see all the people's reaction when they're used to, you know, cool names rather than these funny ones that they have here. And then there's areas here like the Blue Mountains. I don't know if you've ever seen any images from there that are just
seen lots of pictures.
Oh my God, man. It's just absolutely stunning. You can just stand on top of some of those hills and see all of the red walls, you know, on the side of the valley. And you stand there and you're like, how the hell is this even possible? You know? And some of it is, quite a lot of it is still not developed because there's just so much in the Blue Mountains. Every now and then someone opens a new sector and there's still a lot of rock there to be explored and new things to be found.
Those are the ones where you have to, I would say most of them, you rappel in and climb out, or are you approaching it from
the
bottom?
Most of the big places you can actually hike in. There's ways to get down without rappelling, but there's some others that you need to rappel down for sure. Yeah. It's not so much that you can't. You probably can most of the places get hiking, but it would just be so long that it doesn't make sense.
What's the climbing season in Australia? You guys would be inverted, right? So like what kind of season do you guys
but
get?
But it's inverted, but it's the same anyway, because it's in between season, in between summer and winter where the climbing season is. So it's mostly spring and autumn. Although the winter season here, at least in the north of Australia where I am in Brisbane, it's pretty big. Everyone comes here climbing to Frog, which is a big crack climbing here. That because here it's not too cold in winter, everyone comes over up north and they climb at that place, which is stunning too.
What's cold like? Like what? Give me a temperature range like in some of the colder places.
Here in Brisbane and south of Brisbane where this crack that I was talking about is, it could get maybe to 5 degrees, the coldest in winter. It can get to 1 degree sometimes at night late. By the time you would be climbing, you would never be colder than 5 degrees here up north.
Yeah.
What's the climbing history like? You know, I think America has this like very advertised staunch history in terms of Yosemite and the Stone Masters. Like, do you have something that's parallel in Australia?
Well, I do not know a lot about that. Matt, my co-founder, knows a lot about it because he's been climbing here for about 15 years. But I know, you know, people like Wolfgang Gulich and Chris Sharma, a lot of big climbers have been climbing in Victoria, the States. That's the southernmost of the big continent without counting Tasmania. At the Grampians, there's where there's probably some of the biggest and most important routes in Australia, like Groove Train, for example. You can find some Chris Sharma videos doing that one. The thing is, in some of the southern states, most states actually here, there's a bit of an issue with access to some of the areas because of original owners of the land. So some sections have been closed because some climbers, you know, in the old times, they were not as respectful as we are right now, I think, in some cases. And they were just, you know, had graffiti on the walls and stuff like that. That doesn't happen anymore, really. And some areas like where Groove Train is and the Taipan Wall in Victoria, it was closed for a long time, for a few years, and they just reopened it recently, for what I know. So I know that there was a lot of people planning on heading back down and trying those, you know, amazing routes over there.
What about the ethics behind like trad gear and bolting? Is there a lot of trad climbing in Australia? And if so, like what kind of placements do you have, like cams? Is it all universal or is there like something specific?
To be honest, people use absolutely everything. People do not get very happy when they bolt a crack, for example, you know. That's something that's pretty frowned upon, honestly, in most places. But sometimes every now and then you go to a place and you see a bolted crack and you can see all the people climbing with me and like, how the hell are they doing this? Everyone's getting mad. But I think that's quite common probably across the board, right? I reckon that would be the same in the US.
For sure, it's the same. I read something in the Blue Mountains where there were these like old rivets that you'd have to slide
bolts.
A nut onto.
That's what some people do, but they're called carrot bolts. It's basically like a bolt coming out of the wall. It's like a one rod coming out of the wall. But we have specific quick draws for that. So you can just hook them on. But if you don't have them, what people do sometimes is they take a knot, they just slide the piece back down a little bit, and they put the wire around that and just close it and tape it sometimes, which is very sketchy in my opinion.
is that like a just a universal acceptable version of Pro for the crags, or is that like an older rudimentary style that still exists?
I think it's an older thing that some places that the bolts, you know, have lasted really well. It's still bolted at that. No one rebolted those places yet. But anything that's newer, it's the new type of bolts, you know, the little L ones or the rods, depending on what the rod can take and what's better for the place.
What would be the most like occurring type of rock out there?
I think it would be limestone, honestly. The interesting thing is that the blue is, for example, that's what we call the Blue Mountains. A lot of the rock is quite flaky. So if you go to an area that's well developed and everyone climbs all the time, it's absolutely fine. Sometimes you go to some of the places that's a bit newer, and there's a lot of flakes coming out sometimes. And you can see a lot of debris on the ground around you when you're climbing, because it's just falling all the time. That's because there's a lot of iron on the rock mixed in as well. So that's why the rock is so red too in some of those places.
Do you know about any issues with like Aboriginal areas and access to climbs because of those areas?
Well, the one that I know the most about is what I was just mentioning before. It's called Taipan Wall in the Grampians. That was closed a while. Then they opened part of the wall. They didn't open the whole thing, but now you can actually go do... The most iconic routes, which are in the right side of the wall, are open right now. The left side didn't open again. That remained as an Aboriginal historic site. And there's no access to it. And I don't think there will be. But I think it's, there's a lot of associations here in Australia. You have, you know, Climbing Queensland, and each of the states has their own climbers associations that are, you know, advocating for access to areas, mediating with the government and trying to, you know, keep those places open and negotiating sometimes with the Aboriginal owners of the land, and trying to, you know, be the most amicable possible and have a great relationship with the people. I think that's the best way forward.
What is the general relationship between the Aboriginal culture and the people still living that lifestyle and people like yourself? Like what's the kind of cultural history there?
Well, honestly, like, you know, I'm an immigrant here, right? So I've been in Australia only for 5 years. So all of what I know through, you know, friends of mine that have Aboriginal roots themselves, but are, you know, living normal life like any of us. They're just descended from Aboriginals, and most of people are mixed, honestly. After a long time, the thing is, Australians a long time ago, they didn't even consider Aboriginals humans over here. So there was a lot of issues for a long time, and they were quite late to catch up to the rest of the world as well. So, you know, those are things that remain a lot in the collective consciousness of Australians.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine there's a lot of parallels to the Native Americans in America and the struggle that we've had here, and the same. I'm sure there's a lot of parallels there.
Yeah, I think just globally, anywhere you had like colonialism and imperialism go around, right? And you had colonies set up, and you had all the Aboriginal population subjugated. It's like there's just going to be status quo around the world where it's a problem that people are now trying to.
And I'm from Argentina as well. Happened the same over there. The difference is that it was Spanish rather than the English. Same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No. Absolutely.
What sparked the move from Argentina to Australia?
Honestly, the economy of the country. It's just such a complicated place to have a normal life. I'm actually originally a lawyer. I studied law in Argentina. And even though I was always more interested into, you know, building a company or oriented more towards, you know, the commercial side of things, when the economy is so bad, there's so much inflation, you don't really see that there's as many opportunities in a place like that, you know. Of course, there's still great companies to come out of Argentina as well. But I can attest that it's a lot more complicated to start a business over there than to do it somewhere else, like in the US or Australia, you know. Just also access to capital, and just the fact that the currency that you're dealing with every day is worth a little bit less because of inflation, you know. And that doesn't let you really plan for the future because, you know, you need to be saving in a different currency. So for example, Argentina is the biggest holder of US dollars in the world outside of the US, even though we have a different currency. And that's because people save in US dollars because we know that our own currency devaluates every month. So at the end of the month, with what we have left, we buy US dollars, we save in that. That's how crazy
really wild.
The economy is.
Didn't you, wasn't there a recent, very controversial election in Argentina with a new president?
What's his name? We have a new libertarian president who's actually doing a lot of very big reforms right now. The interesting thing in Argentina is that the state got so big at one point. It is still so big that it was employing something like 25% of the population. It's in employment right now, right? So it's absolutely wild. And they're doing a lot of, you know, cutting in the spending of the government. And they're also trying to reorganize the economy. I think in the month they started the government in February, they had a 35% inflation in 1 month. And they managed to bring that down to 13% in 1 month last month. So things are, the data is looking well, even though the people, you know, that are living the daily lives in the country are not having the best time yet, because, you know, that also impacts their own livelihoods. And every time they go out, buy something, everything is expensive and it's hard to get along, you know. But I'm hopeful for the things that this government is doing, and hopeful that they will be managed to at least organize the economy, which is the thing that's really damaging a lot of businesses and a lot of people. And after that, we can sit down and discuss everything else, but that's, you know, basic need. Once it's organized, we can discuss everything else, but let's get on that first, organized the way it should be.
Yeah, no, really interesting. Thanks for sharing. No, I guess maybe then like a good place to pivot here is like, you know, we've got this Argentinian beating spiders out of his shoes, climbing rocks in Australia. And now you've kind of, you know, that's led you into, you know, Red Point. So maybe could you tell us a little bit about, you know, what is Red Point and how did that come about?
Yeah. So it came about some of the first few times that I started going out very often when the pandemic started. I was going out climbing 2-3 times a week. And I was getting so annoyed at just finding the routes with the books, you know, with the guidebooks. And we were sometimes looking for some specific thing that we wanted to climb, and we were just walking around the wall for like 20 minutes, just like, oh, is that little feature, this little feature in the picture, is it the same thing? Is it not? Yeah. Oh, that one looks exactly the same. Is it that one or this one? And you're just discussing there which is the route that you're trying to find. And I was like, how the hell is it possible that there's nothing that's better than this right now? And I started searching for apps everywhere, and there was nothing really out there that was doing what I was thinking about. The original idea actually was augmented reality. And we managed to build a prototype that had augmented reality overlaid over the... So you would point the phone up and you would have the roots overlaid over the actual rock, right? But right now, building that and having that work as an app like we have the app right now, it's very expensive. So basically what we said was, okay, we're going to start with 3D topos, 3D climbing guides, which is what we started doing. And then later on, when that tech gets a bit cheaper, we'll reintroduce augmented reality as well into the app and have a more comprehensive solution for climbers. Because the cool thing about the 3D as well is that you can explore a lot an area before. You can check out better. In some of the places, you can see the holes so good because they're chalked up a little bit and you can see them in 3D. So I think a lot of people have, luckily, have had their minds blown away when they've seen it for the first time, which was really, I mean... When you're working on something for so long, I've been working on it for about a year and a half already, you see every little bit of progress that you make, and it always feels like it's not enough because you're in the weeds of it, right? But when someone else that hasn't seen the progress for a few months comes back and see it again, it's like, whoa, guys, this is so much better, or wow, I never thought that someone was going to be able to make this. It looked like it was never going to happen because the tech has been out there to make a 3D climbing guide for a long time, but no one actually did it. So a lot of the comments that we get is, well, someone finally did it, you know, and that's pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah, I personally came across your Instagram and was just like, wow, like, what is this? You know, just like, again, the same kind of response, like, wow, someone's finally done it. It's like, I knew it was coming, but I didn't know how or where. Your experiences as a lawyer, you said.
Yeah.
So where does this technological skill and software engineering skill come in to not only, you know, come up with just the inspiration for the idea, let alone knowing how to actually take it to a product, like bring us through that process?
I feel like a lot of it comes to being able to meet the right people. You know, Matt, who's my co-founder, is the one that's behind all of the hard tech behind it. I figured out, you know, how to make the 3D models work, how to go scan, how to go do all of those things on my own. And then when we got together and he could put it all together because he had all the right experience and he was a climber, you know, we started that relationship and started working together. And honestly, it's been probably the best working relationship I've ever had since I started working when I was 18. I think that the coolest thing that is that I found someone that's as crazy and passionate as I am about what we're doing and who's willing to put 14-hour work days if we have to one day because we're pushing for something, and is not going to complain about it because he just loves it. And it's, you know, so embedded into it and just wants to make it happen. I feel like why there's not an app like this one out right now, you know, working and everywhere, is because no one pushed it. Because, you know, some of the things are hard, but, you know, you need to make it happen. It's not going to happen on its own. Honestly, I started the business after 2 years sitting on the idea because I was honestly waiting for someone to do it. And I was like, it has to happen. It has to happen. And it just never did. So at the end, I was like, okay, I'm going to start researching, figuring out how we can make this happen and started working on it.
Yeah, really interesting, man. I mean, I guess just for like everybody listening here, you know, A, go check out, you know, Redpoint, the app. And then B, it's like you're getting this like beautiful, really interesting 3D rendering of the rock and the crag with the lines and everything. And so it's very interactive and really, really great to like use and to look and to see. So how has this evolution happened? Because I've only been privy to this for like a couple of weeks. Like, what was the original kind of phase of this starting out? Like you said, you tried to make it, you know, interactive, like almost like VR. So like, what are these improvements that you've made in this app since the beginning, essentially?
Yeah, so we started with augmented reality, right? Like I was mentioning before. But the thing is, all the tech to use that we were using to scan the walls and everything just made it, you know, so much more complicated and slow. And you know, to go scan a wall before with the tech that we were using, it would take us so long. And now it's just so much easier, you know, using drones or LiDARs. But depending on, we change a lot what we're using to scan depending on what's allowed in the area. And some places you can fly drones, some places you can't. So we use other things, and we just mix and match all the together to try to get as many places as we can. In some places you can't do anything, so those are not going to be in the app. That's the state of things. But we're trying to, make the process better, you know? Also at the beginning, what happened is that we can make the models actually look a ton better than what they look in the app right now. But the problem is that it kind of complicates the user experience because it just takes so long to load sometimes because the files are so much bigger, right? If you have better resolution.
Especially if you're like hiking and you're like, oh crap, let me get the 3D data and I've got one bar. You're like, come on. And if you got like this 8K
image. Yeah. Well, the cool thing about the app is that it works all offline, right? So you download the walls to your phone and it always works offline. Okay, cool. So it depends really on the processing power of the phone you have, how long it will take to open the file, right? If you have one of the latest phones, it's going to be a lot faster than an older one. And we were finding through the data that we had that users were sometimes quitting the app before the model opened because it was taking so long that they thought it wasn't working, even though it was just taking long.
It probably was only because 5 seconds. So big. You know, our attention span is so short.
Right, so, back to TikTok, just like swiping on TikTok. Good old TikTok.
Yeah, exactly.
Two-part question here. One, could you explain LiDAR? And then two, are you the only people who can scan to put things in the app? Or is this people can scan crags themselves? If you've been enjoying The Climbing Majority, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. So basically right now I am sitting on 10 walls from California and Colorado. That we got sent by some people that are working with from there. We started this thing called the Dirt Bag Program, basically, which our intention is to allow climbers when they go climbing on their own. If sometimes the original idea came because of the name specifically. We were thinking about someone that's living on a van, climbing every day, and they can go scan something for us if they own a drone or they have an iPhone Pro. And they could go and scan a boulder for us, for example, with an iPhone Pro. And they can send us the data and we can pay them a little bit for that. And they can, you know, pay for the gas for the day or for the camping or whatever they're doing while they're traveling around. That's where the idea came about. But that would allow us to go a lot faster. And that's how we've gotten already 10 walls from the United States. And I'm actually flying tonight at 1:55 a.m. to Turkey. We're going to scan some things in Turkey and then Europe for 4 months. So the cool thing is that when we do it ourselves, we can go so much faster because we've been doing it for so long that we know how to make it work really fast. And that's why we're going to Europe now. While at the same time, we have some people helping us in the US and the intention is to go to the US after that.
What are you using now to scan the walls? Or is that proprietary information?
He'd have to kill you if he tells you.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just curious as to so what are you using to scan the walls?
Yeah.
And how can I use my phone to scan the walls? Like, what is the technology?
You cannot use that phone. You need an iPhone Pro to scan a wall. It needs to be Pro. It can be 12 or forward, but not older than
Peasant
that.
Kyle.
I know. What the hell? I thought I was like this tech guy and I'm just getting shut
down.
I've
got like this like 5-year old, like, I don't even know, Galaxy something that barely works. So count me out, unfortunately.
It's basically because of the tech that they have in the sensors.
Can I scan it with this?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can.
I feel better now.
Exactly. You definitely can't use that one, which is really good.
Okay. Run us through the options. Like what technology in the iPhone Pro allows it to scan?
Let me show you.
The same with the drone.
You see here in the camera square of the iPhone Pro right here, there's this black dot right there. That's a LiDAR scanner. That's a LiDAR sensor. Which allows the phone to record also distance data from the phone to the wall. And that helps generate a 3D mesh of whatever object you're scanning and also shade it and texture it as well.
And then the drone has that same technology, the LiDAR technology.
Some drones have, some others don't, but we've found a way to bridge that gap on our own, and that is proprietary, yes.
Nice, cool.
Good to know, okay. Very cool. So if a drone didn't have the LiDAR technology, you're saying that like someone could take images or pick videos and then send that information to you and you could create something with
exactly,
it.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
I think an interesting, like, just this is tangential, but another application of LiDAR, I could be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure people can use it now to scan boulder holds and then get those holds 3D printed so you can make exact replicas of your project, right? It's like...
Yeah, that's how Will Bosey did the he trained for Burn Your Dreams.
Cheater doesn't count then. The sorry, Will. Yeah. Sorry, you're a cheater, buddy. Doesn't count anymore.
Not an onsite.
Not a send. I could have easily sent that if I had the 3D printed hold at my house.
Yeah, of course.
Trust me.
V17
doesn't count.
Let's go try it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what he did. He went with an iPhone, scanned the holes, then printed them with someone that printed it for them and put it in the gym at the right angle and trained with that for a few months and then went and sent it. That's how he did it.
No, that's really amazing. Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah.
It's such an interesting application of technology in the world of climbing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like such an interesting.
Well, the funny thing is that technology. All of this tech comes from mining, from infrastructure, from sometimes geologists use a lot of this tech that we're using as well. And it's tech that was developed for very heavy industries that spend millions of dollars. They were the ones that could afford to pay for developments of things like this. And only now this tech has gotten cheap enough that we can use it for something like this. And it makes sense, because a few years ago it would have been too expensive. You would not be able to make a product that was, reasonable for anyone. And that you can also run in your phone.
Wow, super cool.
And now we have it in our pockets.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, really cool.
I'm curious because this Dirtbag program piqued my interest because one, I'd love to contribute.
That would be awesome.
It's an awesome project. I'm curious as to just some logistical questions. If you have an iPhone Pro, how far away do you have to be? Or because some crags are kind of blocked by bushes and stuff. Like, can you just be at the bottom and like take, you know, do the scan, or do you have to be certain far away? Are there rules for someone that might be interested in participating in this?
So with phones, mostly what we're trying to get people to do are boulders, right? Because that's easy. You don't need to be too far up. Usually use a selfie stick, and that's enough to get high enough for the boulders, you know. In some of the other climbing areas that are big walls that you can't scan with a drone because it's not allowed there, that's what we have to do ourselves, because we're using a big LiDAR scanner with a huge tripod and just putting it up there. And that has a lot bigger range as well. You can scan 100 meters away from the wall, which that's allows cool. things to, you know, to come within frame and be part of the thing. But of course, we have limits still, and there's things that we're still figuring out. And trying to make better, because there's places like Yosemite where you can't fly a drone, and it's really hard to get permission to get in there. And the walls are so big that there's no way you can do it with the LiDAR scanner, even if you're very far away. So, you know, we're trying to figure these things out, or maybe, you know, see if there's a way to actually get a permit to get in there after we have a better reputation.
The permit would be for what? To bring a LiDAR scanner in there? Or
No. You can fly a drone. To fly a drone.
Oh, to fly a drone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, good luck.
Well, I feel like, what? Didn't Jimmy Chin got a permit for Free Solo, right?
They probably did. Yeah.
He did.
You just ring up Jimmy and be like, yo, dude. Jimmy, I need you. Jimmy. Your country needs you.
That would be cool. Yeah, that would be definitely awesome.
Yeah, no, but for sure, I mean, there's some way. Maybe you have to be an Academy Award winning documentarian, but, you know, there's definitely a way.
Hey, I don't think he was until he did finish Free Solo, so.
That's true.
That's true, right.
There's still hope.
we'll figure it out. You know, we've been finding roadblocks along the way. You always figure it out. It might take a bit longer, a bit shorter, but you always do in the end.
I think there's a second part to this. So, like, scanning the physical rock is cool, and that's, I feel like, half the puzzle. The second part of the puzzle to me is putting the correct route information on those scans and making sure it's the right route name, it's the right route grade, and potentially like information about the route itself. How are you sourcing that information?
So far, we've been doing all of the route drawing ourselves because we've been actually going and scanning all the places. We've been actually there physically, right? So we've seen all the routes. The cool thing is that, for example, in some of the 3D models, you can see the bolts, you know, on the rock. And that makes things easy for us to just do that work. And then route names and all those things are just, you know, publicly available sources. We just find them online wherever we can. Try and find a lot of different sources. Because that information, it's basically like street names, you know. They're basically owned by the community. No one has rights over route names and grades. So that's public information. You can just use that. Then the hard work, which is what we're doing on our own, is just drawing the routes, you know, getting in the models, drawing the routes where they should be, checking them, and sometimes receiving feedback from users that are saying, hey, this is not going the right way. And I just getting a call with them and they show me where it actually goes through and just change it. But soon, very soon, the idea is that we also are going to allow users to contribute and add the routes on their own and put the names and everything. So that will also help us, you know, go a lot faster.
Yeah, it's quite a monumental task. There's lots of rock to scan.
That's the thing, you know. one of the things at the beginning when I started, I thought that the complicated thing, the actual hard thing, was building the tech. When I started working on it, I realized that the tech was the easy part. The hard part is all the logistics of it, you know, because there's so many different, you have the whole world to go scan, you know, if you want to. That's why at the beginning we started here where we are in Australia, and now we're going to Europe and the US, which is the two largest markets where most of the climbers live, honestly. That's all the two places where most climbers live in the world. And then from there, we'll see where it takes us.
So does any drone have a LiDAR scanner on it, or more the modern drones essentially? And then, you know, are you essentially just filming the route, and then somebody can just upload or send you a file of the footage, and you can, you know, from that have the data you need to render it three dimensionally?
It's with that and one more step that we're adding. That's what we figured out. And with that, we can reconstruct the whole 3D model from there. But
from someone looking to contribute and help you, they don't need to know your proprietary step or anything.
No.
They can just film it.
Yeah.
Do a nice filmed shot of the actual route, boom, send over the file to you, and that's all you need to render these routes. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So to make the files smaller, we figured out that that's actually easier to do rather than a video to do pictures. So you can set the drone to take pictures to 2 second intervals or something like that, and do that the same way, which is, you know, a 10 times less data, and it's still good enough.
Nice. Okay. Really interesting.
What kind of compensation structure have you set up for people contributing?
Yeah. So basically right now we're paying $20 per wall, which is when it's a sport or trad crag, for example, and $5 per boulder. And it's really on the time that it takes to scan something like that. Usually, I don't know, a wall that's about 20, 25, 30 meters across by 30 meters high, it would take you about 20 minutes to scan, 20, 30 minutes to scan. And a boulder can take you 5-10 minutes. It's pretty fast, honestly, with the phone. So you can do quite a lot a day.
You could buy yourself an iPhone Pro, go just dirtbag for like, you know, 2 or 3 days straight and send you like a gazillion files and then pay off your iPhone Pro, hypothetically, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's really cool, man. It's very, very interesting.
Actually, while I was in Argentina for the holidays, Matt went to my co-founder. He went to Victoria and he scanned 50 boulders in one day. So,
yeah. Wow.
I think it was 56 or 55, something like that. It was a crazy number.
We gotta reach out to Brendan Bars and get him to scan the nooks.
Wow, that's really crazy. Yeah, that's very, very interesting. Yeah.
That'd be cool. Yeah.
Do we get a referral? A referral competition?
Send him through.
We'll figure something out. Brendan scanned 1,000 boulders. Can we get $5?
Yeah. Yeah, no.
That's super cool, man. My next question is, how are you going to handle mass adoption? So what happens when you have thousands of people sending you pictures every day?
Well, right now we've basically been doing this work the past month. It's really setting systems, automated systems, to do a lot of it in automatic form, and we only intervening where we need to. So we are right now have a process that's actually pretty good till we have probably 50 people contributing, which is a lot because one person can do a lot. And after that, we're probably gonna have to get, you know, start hiring some more people and get them to help us do what we need to do to add everything in there.
What does your funding situation look like? Or have you created a revenue source? And if you haven't, what does it look like in the future?
Not yet. Basically, right now we're running on funds from investment, basically. And the idea is that at some point later this year, we're going to start a subscription, a freemium subscription, where we're going to have part of the app for free and other things are going to be paid. That's the cool idea, ultimately.
Yeah, very cool. Really interesting. And so long term, you're trying to essentially like categorize and render most of the major climbing centers in the world is kind of the gist of what.
Yeah, exactly. We're basically going to be, you know, Strava for rock climbers, basically, you know.
Yes,
that's what a lot of people compare us to. And I think it's a fair comparison, honestly.
You should have like speed records at the bottom of the routes.
We have so many ideas. It's just the only thing that is a limitation right now is that we are only two people working on it, but we have so many cool things that we're working on that we have in the plan for this year, for next year as well to add. Actually, we have maps with approaches to the cracks coming up probably in 2 weeks into the app as well. So we're going to be able to also follow the trail like you do, for example, in all trails. To the base of the cliff or wherever you go climbing, same with boulders. That's another big feature that's we're actually thinking on adding it a lot later, but once the app was out there, that was the most requested feature by users. They were like, we want maps, we really want maps. We had lost all the time trying to find the things.
Yeah, to get to the crag, to get to the climb, that's really interesting. I was even thinking that from an application standpoint of like ice climbing. It's like obviously a rendering of the ice climb itself wouldn't be very useful because it changes
every year.
But to actually get there and not get lost or bushwhack or something, that's actually a very useful application. So that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's basically GPS. It's nothing complicated, but it's useful. You know, it's very useful actually.
Totally. Yeah. No, absolutely.
What about right now I see like like a app like Mountain Project, or is it 29 or 27 cracks? Anyway, so like these are houses of lots of like user contributed data and information about the climbs, like comments and the route descriptions and people's opinions on what these routes are about. And I think that's super valuable information. Do you see at some point not like being able to bridge the gap and like someone clicks on a route having looked at the map and all that kind of information pops up? Like, I know that, you know, we just launched an episode talking about data rights and user contributions and what Mountain Project is doing with that. Like, do you see some sort of symbiotic relationship where, you know, someone could explore your map and then go also at the same time without changing locations digitally, get that information that you find on Mountain Project?
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I think we're going to open things for people to be able to contribute the same way. And if it's their own comments and their own descriptions, they can copy them across. If it's their own thing, they cannot copy someone else's, right? But if they wanted to do that, they could on their own way, and also create new ones, you know. But I think one of the things that's really cool about what we built, in my opinion, is that that's not so useful anymore. You know, when you have a whole 3D model that's very detailed of the area that you're going to, now the comment, now the description, it's not as useful as it was before when you had just a picture and it was 2D. Because you can get a lot more information from the 3D model than you could from a picture, you know? So the need for that kind of information just goes down dramatically. And maybe you would need, you know, some warning or something in a specific place, or understanding what type of bolts are being used, if the carbon bolts are here in Australia, so that you know what you're getting into, you know, things like that. But descriptions themselves, not really important that much.
What about potential for like gear recommendations, or, you know, rack size or the amount of bolts? Is that being put in, something you're thinking about for the future, obviously?
Yeah, that's definitely something that we're thinking in for the future as well. Especially because when you're traveling around, sometimes, you know, they have different anchors, they have different types of bolts, and it's good to have that information so that when you get there, you don't have to try and scour the internet and find what this little thing coming off the wall is and what you can buy to use it. You know, you can know that it's a carbon bolt and what kind of gear you need to buy to actually make it work and not use a
precariously placed nut around weird bar.
Exactly.
Don't fall.
As this technology progresses and as our, you know, cell phone processing power progresses, how detailed are these maps going to be able to be? Like, are people going to be able to zoom in and see like a sharp in focus bolt or a hold? Like, is the limiting factor the LiDAR, or is the limiting factor our processing power on our phones?
The limiting factor, I can make already a model that's absolutely amazing, but the phone would take forever to open it. The files would be, you know, 1 gigabyte.
Wow.
So it's really not how we're creating the model or the tech that we're using to create the model. Mm-hmm. It's more the fact that it would be a pain for the user in their phone to wait for it to open. And also for, you know, data transfer, when you're downloading it to your phone, it would take forever to download as well. It's all that part.
For now.
That's a limiting factor for now. Yeah, for now.
Yeah. What about the introduction of the Apple Vision Pro? Like, are people going to be able to explore your 3D maps with their visors?
That is something we're thinking about, because it's very compatible with what we're doing. It's, I don't know how really useful would it be, unless you are, I don't know, Adam Ondra and you're visualizing silence every night before going to sleep because you're really going hard, you know. That would probably be helpful. But if you're not Adam Ondra and, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. What about the ability to virtually climb a route from ground to top using your technology and a technology like the Apple Vision Pro? Have you thought of something like that?
There's a video game or something like that you can use in Oculus, if I'm not wrong, for climbing like that. But I think it's based on VR in a way that someone climbed that route with like a 360 helmet on or something like that. I think that's the way it works. I haven't actually tried it. But it would be interesting to see how that would work, because you would also need in the same time a replica of the actual wall somewhere in a gym so that you can find holds, because if you're pulling onto nothing, it'd probably not be fine, you know. You'd be like,
unless you're Adam Andre and you're on the ground
and you do all those
exactly the same thing. Yeah
yeah,
that would be crazy though. I don't know, I'm just randomly thinking of this, if you got 3D print of like a specific crack, like let's say like a pitch, like halfway up Yosemite, you put on VR goggles. So it's like you're not in a gym anymore. You're like on the wall of Yosemite, yeah. You know, like climbing. It's like, that's not that, like, that's pretty feasible technologically, like from where we are right now, you know, like that's not like revolutionary at that point to think about.
Climb the Salathe wall in our gym, yeah. You know, like you could like able to go and like climb it and act like you're on Yosemite.
You know, that would be like a lineup around the door, like random people for sure. Like, be down to come try that out for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But the funny thing is that I probably think it's going to be a big fuss for a month or two. We'll be aligned for a few blocks around and then no one anymore, you know, and after that.
Done. Yeah. Once the goggles are all sweaty and chalky and nasty.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's very true. Yeah.
What has the community's response been so far? Like mostly positive, mostly negative?
As long as we've had barely some few bad experiences with some people, but I can count them with the fingers on one hand, honestly. And they've only been online. All the people we've met at the crag, they've seen us with the t-shirt that we were over there, you know, either climbing or scanning the walls, and they were asking us what we were doing, and they were all, you know, very excited. Which is really good, because sometimes when you are working for so long in something and it's taking a lot of effort and you're going and hiking every day, a few kilometers and scanning, and it's like, oh, is this going to work, you know? And getting people there to, you know, smile and get crazy about it and ask you about it. And I hand them my phone and they play with it and like, this is awesome. So you come back from that day scanning, you know, feeling full of energy, even though you know, trashed from hiking 10 kilometers that day. but it's really cool. You know, it just gives you energy back.
Yeah, really interesting. Have you had any pushback from more so like climbing purists in the community, you know, like maybe could be like the older generation of thinking like it's too much of an involvement of technology in with climbing? Like, have you ever had any feedback with that?
The funny thing is that probably some of the most excited people were like 50-year-olds, which was something that I did not expect. You know, sometimes things happen, you don't know how is this, you know, happening. And they just messaged me. I was like, this is so cool. I thought about this when I was in my 20s, but the tech wasn't there. It's great to see it happen now. But then you have, I don't know, some 40-year-olds that have a very strong opinionated posture. It's like, oh, now you're going to lose the art of route finding. And I don't know if
you don't want to use it, don't use it.
You can't lose it if you never had it.
You can choose to unload it or not. That's your choice. Yeah.
I saw one article written about you guys, and it called you guys the on-site killer.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really funny tagline.
Yeah. It was that was something that a friend of ours told us like the first time he actually saw, because we've been talking about it for a while. When he saw it for the first time, he was like, oh, this is the death of on-site. This is not, you can't count this on-site anymore after seeing this the way it is.
It's going to be the episode title. Just so
the death of on-site. Yeah. We're like, just clip right there.
I like that title. It's very funny.
Oh, man.
Although one of the things that I figured out is that it's very hard to tell proportions. You know, you can see the 3D model, you can understand it. It's hard to understand how big or small things are unless you are at the wall, you know. You can see the remodel, and sometimes even though you have how long the roots are in the data there, you can see that it's hard to understand it until you're standing in front of the wall. And when you look at the model in front of the wall, it's a different experience than looking at it in your house. And one of the crazy things that happened to us last week, I met a friend at the gym here. I was climbing, and he comes to me very excited and says, hey, you know, I met this girl a few weeks ago, and we were on a date that he was explaining to me how her housemates and her, every night, they hook up their phone to their computer, to the TV, and open RedPoint and explore the cracks in the TV so that they know what they're going to do next, and looking at the cracks in the TV. And I was like, I never even thought about hooking up my phone to the TV. And then I came home and I did it myself. I was like, whoa, this is so cool, you know?
Wow.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, really, really interesting. Yeah, I could totally get that, right? You're like getting ready for like, you know, your week, you're getting stoked to go climbing for the weekend and to go do that. And yeah, and I think in relation to like technology, if someone is kind of like, you know, not interested in that, it's like, well, you can just not use it and then go on site, you know, it's like, that option's still there for sure. For, I think the lesser amount of people who aren't interested in kind of bridging you know, technology with climbing nowadays, if that makes sense. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, also, how many are the people that really care that much you know, in that sense. For me, it's all about, you know, I don't want to lose time getting lost, getting to the crag when I'm hiking. That's why we're putting the maps together, because that's annoying. When I go climbing, I want to go climbing. Sometimes when you're hiking, it's fun to get lost and find your way back. At least it's fun for me. But when you go climbing, you don't want to get lost. You just want to get to the wall and you want to start climbing. And it's all that time getting lost there, all the time just trying to find the route at the crag. That's the thing that's, you know, holding you back from, you know, doing 2, 3, 4 more climbs that day. And that's what I care about. And that's why we put it together this way.
Absolutely. Yeah. The use case is there. And I think it's awesome that the community has been so responsive in such a positive way. And I mean, you've been doing great on Instagram. I love the way you guys are promoting. It's very just eye-catching. It's different. People are just like, wow, like, what is this? So,
yeah, the funny thing is it's just the product.
Guys' success.
You know, that,
exactly.
That's very funny.
Which is so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just videos of the product with music in the back, and they've been doing great. We haven't spoken with anything. I was actually thinking that we should do a post, you know, introducing ourselves at some point, because then no one knows who we are except the people that have found us at the crag and met us in person here. And then that, and the cool thing is that a lot of people on those posts are like, when are you coming to England? When are you coming to the Czech Republic? Mm-hmm. When are you coming to the US? When are you coming here? That's the most of the posts, most of the comments are that. When are you coming? Fill that gap or whatever you want. That's the most common comment everywhere.
Do you have any competitors that are starting to try to like take up some of the market share?
Not really. I know some people are working on it, but they changed direction and started doing, you know, things in adjacent industries, but not into climbing anymore. So
Very cool. It's awesome. It's super exciting.
Yeah, it's very cool. Very excited for a trip to Europe and start adding cracks, you know, everywhere already.
Are you coming to the West Coast when you come out to America?
Oh, definitely.
You're going to stop by Vegas?
Most definitely, yeah.
All right, sweet. Well, give me a ring while you're out here.
Definitely will.
And I'm going to take you up on your dirt bag offer. I want to give you guys a scan.
That would be awesome.
I'll give you guys Calico Basin.
Man,
just you can fly the drone there, so I'll be able to get stuff. Do you want to get just like in the onboarding process with instructions? You want to send me?
Chat with you later, and we can. Explain how to do what you need to do, and it's pretty easy. Nothing too complicated.
Cool. Awesome, man. Yeah, if I have the tools, I'd love to contribute if I can.
That would be awesome. We'd be, you know, very well received. We want to have as many cracks as we can, as fast as we can in the US, in Europe. So anyone who wants to contribute to that, very, very welcome. I already have a pretty big list of people that want to contribute. We're trying to, at the beginning, start working with people that are already, you know, drone pilots and have some experience with what we're doing. But I still have a lot of people that want to learn and want to know how to do it. So we're going to start with everyone sometime this year.
Cool. Yeah. If someone's listening that is interested and might have the skill set or the equipment to do so, what should they do to reach out to you?
Probably by the time the podcast comes out, we're going to have the new site up, in the new website up, and there's a form there that's in the under the tab that's going to be called Dirtbag Program. We can just basically submit your details, and we're making a list with that. Or if when you see that it's not out there yet, just shoot us a message on Instagram. I'm always replying pretty fast, and I can, you know, have a chat with anyone who's interested and go from there.
Cool. Awesome. Max, you got anything else?
No, that's everything, man. It's been a really fun conversation, honestly, Martin, and it's been great to meet you. And the app's super cool, and I wish you guys the best, and, you know, look forward to seeing your coming success and expansion with the app and everything.
Yeah, very excited to get to the US and to Canada as well. Where are you in Canada? Yeah,
if you come into Canada, man, I'm just Horseshoe Bay, like 35 minutes away from Squamish. Okay. So if you're coming to Squamish, man, you want to hang out, you want to go climb for a day or anything, I'd love to do that. Happy to show you around.
I'm definitely gonna get there at some point next year, because one of my best friends lives in Vancouver as well, from Argentina too. Nice. And since I can stay at his place and go scan over there, I'm probably gonna go do that.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, well, please do. If you do come to town, I'll give you my contact info and everything. Just reach out. It'd be great to, you know, meet you in person and
come out for a day. Would be fucking awesome. I would love that.
Awesome, man.